time for a bonus. A bonus episode. I love episodes of theater. We're going off the beaten path.
Off the beaten path.
We're off.
Hey everyone, welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham. As you know, each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses, but this week we bring you a bonus episode, an artist spotlight. We've been giving you a few of these for the past couple years, but we've been doing a special mini-series on the people who are nominated for our Playwright Award at the Theater Playwright Award at Fringe 2022. Yeah, okay, 2022 was the first time that we did it. Thank you. Our guest just helped me out a great deal. And then this year we're hosting it again. We're going to be doing the Theater Playwright Award 2023. But we wanted to make sure that you are keeping an eye out for these artists, whether at Fringe or otherwise. So I want to introduce you to someone who's now my new friend. And potential future collaborator, a phenomenal performing artist from Serbia, who is also absolutely one of my favorite writers of Fringe from last year. Unfortunately, the other two hosts didn't get to see your show, Steps of Glory, but it was one of my favorite shows of all of Fringe last year, and I don't always love one-person shows, so that's saying something. Everybody, I want to introduce you to Anya Rasic. Hey.
Yes.
How are you, Anya?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me here. It's great to see you.
Of course. I want to start with Steps of Glory real quick. That's what you were nominated for, and and a piece of theater that I still think about, which is crazy to me.
That's an honor.
especially because it was about Lord Byron, right? Can you kind of explain to the listeners sort of first of all what it was about, and then like kind of your inspiration for it, and then I'll tell you why I enjoyed it so much.
Absolutely. So my show Steps of Glory was a one-person show that followed pieces of life of a romantic poet, Lord Byron, who was a British poet, and he was a big traveler and a big lover of Europe at that time. He was, a lot of people also describe him as like a first celebrity. He was the first person that like a lot of people wanted to read about, that people wrote to each other about him. And my log line was, what drives the man of words to the edge of silence? So in my exploration of his character, initially I started it as a school project, and I wanted to really expand and push myself as an artist. And I was kind of timid at the time as a performer, and I was like, I feel like I need to just do someone who is ruthless, who says everything that's on their mind, who doesn't care if they insult or offend anyone, and also just wanted to stretch some skills of like accent and physicality on stage, because he also had a foot impediment, so he had sort of a club foot, which changed a little bit of his walk. So I initially started my process with just wanting to expand myself as an artist, but little did I know that this was going to go beyond just that. And I, as I said, I wanted to explore someone who was ruthless and who was a man of words. But then I was also like, I feel like in order to really connect with him and find that humanity that we all carry, I wanted to explore moments of what happens when something unexpected happens in his life, which now I can spoil it because show is no longer on.
Right.
But through the process of the show, we meet him coming back from one of his big travels, you know, addressing the audience, kind of like belittling them, you know, engaging them, entertaining them, all sorts of things, until he finds really terrible news that his daughter has died, who was 5 years old and with whom he didn't really have a great relationship, whom he kind of abandoned because under the excuse of, I'll be back, you know, I'll come back for you. Like, you can just live in the convent.
Right.
And after he finds those news, we get to see him kind of go through different levels of grief and shock and really having to come to terms of being a human being, because we all have those weaknesses as much as we sometimes want to put a mask on. I am the God, you know,
sure.
It's like, nope, we all have the spots.
Right.
And then basically Act Two, which I developed specifically for Fringe, I wanted to see that story from the perspective of the daughter. And I set it in kind of this purgatory-like space. Right. And but honestly, my intention with that was just to explore that innocence of a kid and, mm-hmm. you know, get that full father or a parent-child relationship, which I think is very critical in so many of our lives. So that's kind of a short, long version of the show.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and I think the reason why it really rang true for me was just the artist level of it all, using him as a vehicle for the themes of the grief and the, you know, and sort of questioning your choices as an artist and things like that. I was going through, I think at the moment, but even if I hadn't been, I think it still would have worked for me. But at the moment I was going through sort of like this existential crisis as an artist.
Yeah.
And now I have a daughter. Mm-hmm. And my wife had just, we had just found out she was pregnant.
Wow.
So I didn't know it was a daughter or whatever. But I, as a father, it was like, as a new father, like who knew I was headed that way. It was like I hadn't told anybody yet. The co-host of this podcast didn't know, right? So I was sitting there like, oh my God. And everything rang true. But then your performance of it, specifically actually the way that you were able to be both characters so vividly different. Like the fact that I was actually watching the first part being like, oh, this person might actually identify as male. Like, that's where I was, like, actually in that sort of vein. And then in the second act, I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. You know what I mean?
It was a trip. It was a trip.
And the age, the ability to play the age so differently, and the child being, as you say, kind of angelic and cherubim of sort, like, in this purgatory. I don't know. It hit hard for me. And then you sent us the script, and I read it, and you wrote things in the script that I saw on stage without them being dialogue, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And then when I gave it to the other two co-hosts, they were just like, yeah, this is great. Let's go for it. We love it. They had seen it. I really wish they had seen it. I wish the listeners who didn't get to see it had seen it, because it really was incredible. You should definitely keep working on that. Move it towards whatever it can be, because it's exciting.
Thank you.
But I want to start over a little bit. We'll get to where you're headed from there. Mm-hmm. But I want to know a little bit more about you. As we said, you're Serbian, and you're a phenomenal performer. So I kind of want to know where that comes from. Like, how did you start? And then where's your training, education?
Yes. I was born and raised in Serbia. And my whole family's still back there. I grew up as a dancer mainly. I did a lot of competition dance, and through that I got to travel around Europe. And I think that kind of developed my sense of being a world traveler and wanting to explore and wanting to, you know, speak different languages.
But also being so physical. You were so physical as Lord Byron. Like, even just, like, as you said, the foot and the, you know, like, little things like that. Or, like, the way you carried yourself. So I could see that, being a trained dancer. That's interesting.
Yes, and I think the dancing, I didn't even know how much it was going to help me as an actor now. Or at least when I'm exploring characters that are mainly acting based, dancing movement has really, really helped me.
Well, that body awareness. So, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So I grew up doing that. And then at age of 15, I decided that I wanted to pursue better education, because in Serbia, I would have had to make a choice between being a performer or having good education, because you kind of have to specialize early on. And I just wasn't ready. I mean, 15. Who can decide what they want to do for the rest of their life at 15?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I applied for some boarding schools in America, and I got a scholarship in which I came here. And then in high school, I discovered musicals, because I had to be a part of the program through my scholarship.
What was your first, like, endeavor into musical theater?
I mean, this is going to be funny, but it's not a typical Hairspray or Les Mis. Yeah. It was Children of Eden.
Oh, okay. Children of Eden. Yeah, hey, sure. I saw that. I've seen a few high schools put that one up.
Yep. I was one of the animals in Noah's Ark. Honestly, I just had a great time, because I was like, oh, this is still dancing, but, like, you also get to sing. And, like, play these silly little characters,
right,
you know?
Exactly.
Not to say the Bible characters are silly, you know.
Sure. We're yeah, whatever. To this. Yeah.
But we're Everything's all silly. Silly. We're
yeah.
all silly.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and then through high school, my high school program, I just had some incredible educators who really put their heart and soul in it, and I believe that can really change someone's life at that age, you know, being in high school and trying to figure out who you are. And I was away from home, so, you know, establishing like almost new family, a new community. I didn't know anyone. My English was not very good, you know.
Yeah.
And I think they really took me in, the theater department there, and took care of me, and I think I just fell in love with it. And from that, I wanted to do musical theater because I thought that was a really good way to merge my dancing background and also this new thing that I was discovering of singing.
Yeah.
So after high school, I went to Chicago for a year and was in a musical theater dance concentration program, which was great because it was kind of, I was still playing into my strengths and everything, but I was still stretching myself in terms of learning how to sing. Mm. And that's where I took my first acting class as a part of the department.
Okay.
And I remember going home one day and just being like, why do I like my acting class better than all of the dance classes that I have?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I couldn't shake it off. And also, it really didn't help, or it did actually help a yeah. lot, that yeah. I was in Chicago, which is an incredible yeah. theater city.
Amazing. Yeah.
And honestly, a lot of people don't give it as much credit as it should be given.
Oh, wow. Well, screw those people. Because Chicago theater scene rules. We have many friends of the pod out in Chicago
yes.
who are just killing the game.
Oh, yeah. My God. And it's, I honestly think that that 1 year, and the reason probably why the universe or God or whatever put me in Chicago for that 1 year, was just to experience that theater.
Cool.
And be like,
yeah.
oh, these are the stories I want to tell. Because mm-hmm. Chicago, I mean, and also for being a student in Chicago, you can see theater for $0. You
right.
can, we were seeing like 3 or 4 plays a week sometimes,
yeah.
you know, just,
yeah.
I mean, oh, so many great theater houses, but also like so many small little venues that you never heard about, and you just go and it's completely transformed
right.
with usually minimum set, you know.
Yeah.
There, it's not a lot of budget, it's not a lot of money, but it's a lot of heart and soul.
Yeah.
And the stories I saw there were so raw and provocative in ways, and it really was like it opened a new door for me of what it means to be an artist and what is the ability of artists to do.
Right.
And I decided to apply for an acting like summer program just to see if, you know, that's really what I liked, or is it just a phase?
Yeah.
And that's when COVID hit. So I was like, you know, this actually feels like a good redirection of my life. And started taking some classes online, and basically mid COVID, I moved to Los Angeles, and
wow.
I just graduated from Art of Acting Stella Adler Studio.
Oh, cool.
Where I went for 2.5 years. And that's kind of where I got my initial training, because I'm still very young. So,
right.
you know, I'm sure that I'll be training for the rest of my life. But
sure.
that was my first 2.5 years of really specific acting focus, you know, Shakespeare and Chekhov and scene study and all the other things that come in the acting programs.
Very cool. And then you, for a little while, there was something that you were kind of running, or you were part of the playground?
It's called the Earthlings Ensemble.
Earthlings, yeah. Tell me about that.
Yes. So the Earthlings Ensemble started as a few members of my class and I got together, and it was still COVID time, so there wasn't a lot of
sure.
plays going on in Los Angeles, and we caught ourselves hanging out in the parks a lot because, again, of COVID. And we just wanted to do a little bit more because we were in school and obviously studying a lot of other plays, but we
mm-hmm.
were just starting to become curious about what it means to make your own things, to create your own content, especially
sure.
in this day and age where
yeah.
it seems very hard to step into the industry as
right.
a young artist if you have no credits and no experience. So we were
right.
like, well, how about we make our own experience and credits, and then,
right.
you know, someone will see us down
yeah.
the line.
Yeah.
So through Earthlings, we did a few performances. Our first one was in the park, which
cool.
was really special. And
yeah.
there's just something really exciting performing outside, which is where our name Earthlings also comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that majority of our ensemble is an international student at the time. So
awesome.
That was great because we could really mix different cultures and perspectives.
That's cool.
And through Earthlings, we started organizing workshops that would meet once a month, and we were working with incredible Dana Martin, who is honestly just an overall badass artist who took us through these workshops. They were sort of viewpoints based, but also there was a lot of like just like presence work and breathing and just regulating your nervous system as an artist and how important that is to actually step into these really challenging roles. Like you need to be calm, you know,
and yeah, it's not always about like the Chubbuck idea of like pull up your trauma, you know. Sometimes it's like, no, I need to just be fully aware of myself.
And yes, yes,
viewpoints changed my life, not just my acting life or my artist life. Viewpoints and the things surrounding it, those, as you say, like kind of like viewpoint, that stuff, it changed the way I saw my body. It changed the way I saw the way I moved on stage and in my life. It changed the way I thought of myself. It's so weird. It's such an interesting
and
thing.
And expanding that awareness, the awareness of yourself and how do you interact with people? How do you interact with the space around you?
Yeah.
So that was, these workshops were really powerful and it was a beautiful space to, you know, there were just people from all over the place that were coming and people who would find us on Instagram. I met, actually, I was in London earlier this year and there was a girl who found us on Instagram that was from London. And she was like, oh, I really love the stuff you're doing and posting online. And then we met and had a coffee in London. And later on, she was able to come visit and take one of our workshops.
That's
which was kind of like one of those things that's like, this is why we do this, you know?
And that's still going on. You're still doing workshops and stuff?
Yes. Okay. We've been on a little bit of a break with our workshops, but hopefully soon we'll be. We're just finding new ways to kind of listen more to what people were asking for and adjust. And, you know, we really wanted to cultivate a community that's very friendly and give people what they want to take, you know?
Because
I think LA has a lot to offer in terms of acting, but sometimes there is kind of a, this is the class that everyone is taking right now, you know?
Right, exactly.
And we just wanted to like, actually, I mean, playground, you said playground, but honestly, it's such a good word to describe it. Just like play around, come into the space, don't have a scene, you know, just explore your body in different ways.
I think that's kind of how you described it to me the first time, which is why that word stuck with me, is that you were like, it's like a playground for actors. And I was like, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I love that. I think it's, you know, and I remember you inviting me and me being like, yeah, I'm going to make it. And I kept like kind of missing it and missing it. And most of that was the fact that I, as a performer, was in a very insecure time and was like, I don't know. I don't think I'm doing this anymore. I think I'm a writer. I think that's not really what and now I just got my equity card back. I'm like, okay, I'm ready. Let's do this.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm just like, okay, it's time. I got to do it. Mm-hmm. So, I want to, so when you're back into it, I want to join.
Yes.
And listeners, you should join too.
Yes, I'll forward everyone to info.
yeah, perfect. Okay, so then the future. I want to look forward, okay? Mm-hmm. What, obviously, you have goals. I want to know what those are. But, like, what do you know for a fact is, like, in the works right now? Do you have anything that you're working on? Do you have anything you've booked? Like, what's going on?
Yes. So I just finished, I like to say this year has been a year of the Tempest for me.
Okay.
Because I just finished a production of the Tempest with...
Who were you?
I was an ensemble member.
Okay,
and
you'd be
Juno.
Phenomenal Miranda.
Well, we're getting to that.
Okay.
But in the previous one, I was an ensemble member and Juno, who is one of the spirits that comes to bless the loved couple.
Cool.
But the cool part about this is that two different companies, Shakespeare Center of LA and After Hours Company, who is an immersive theater company, did this play together. So it was set up in this, it's a warehouse that was basically transformed to be an immersive space.
Cool.
And that allowed us ensemble members to be a part of the immersive part of The Tempest.
That
so
rules.
Everyone who walked in was in The Tempest.
Yeah.
They were on the ship with the characters.
Yeah.
And then they went through this hallway that was kind of like the water and the sounds and the smells of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And then they entered a space that was set up like a 200-seat thrust stage, but different corners of the island had different... Like, there was Prosperous House, Ariel's Tree, Miranda's Swing Set, and then Caliban's Cave.
Cool.
And for the first hour, the audience members were solving puzzles, and it was kind of like an escape room.
Cool.
But also immersive theater, because we could, there was a bunch of us that were interacting with them, which was really a wonderful way to make Shakespeare accessible for the audiences that are usually intimidated, which I tend to find with younger people, you know, who... Just, Shakespeare's old and Shakespeare, you know, I'm just going to go see something else.
Right.
This was a really, our audiences were really like a lot younger than you usually see in theaters, a lot more diverse. So it was just a very accessible way to make Shakespeare.
Yeah, I wish I had known about that because I would have, or more about it because I would have probably tried to get my kids from Shakespeare Youth Fest to go. They're all just Shakespeare nerds and they...
I'll let you know next time for sure.
Next time,
sure.
Let's go for
yes.
it. Okay, but then what's the next one?
So the next one is also The Tempest. Yeah. and this time I'm going to be working with the Antius Theater Company.
Awesome.
And in that one I'm playing Miranda.
Wow.
So
congrats. That's really cool. Antius is a phenomenal theater company. We shout them out on the podcast all the time.
Yes. I'm very excited. And I'm getting to work with one of my first Shakespeare teachers, which is a really incredible gift and such a full circle to
very
get
cool.
to do that.
That's very cool.
Yes.
The Tempest I've directed twice with Shakespeare Youth Festival, and I saw it at Oregon Shakespeare Festival right before COVID.
Wow, yeah.
That was a really solid production. I like it a lot. I think I need to see a production that like really affects me. I just don't think I have. I think it's, I know it too well. I've after directing it so many times, they're like, yeah, Tempest. I'm gonna see yours. So
yes,
change
I'd
my
love
mind.
To have you there. Yes, I will.
No, I already know you'd be a phenomenal Miranda. So that's
Thank
very
you.
Exciting. If you have a good Ferdinand, then you're fine.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm
okay.
sure he'll be great.
You don't
I haven't
know
met
him yet.
Okay.
But okay. Good.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out. Okay. But so then, moving forward from that, do you know of anything else coming up, or
yes.
what are your goals in general? Yeah.
I'm also currently in post production for one of the short films that we shot earlier this year, which was very much just for really enthusiastic theater
content creation,
but also film friends who were just like, "Let's do this," and we pulled it together. Did two overnight shoots, and I think we actually created something really wonderful. And just as it goes with film, it takes a little bit of time in post-production. So we're currently in that stage, which I'm really excited. The name of the movie is Cake. And it's basically about these two completely opposite human beings, strangers, who by circumstances end up in the same room and kind of change each other's lives, and just not taking for granted how a stranger can really change an interaction with a stranger, unexpected interaction can change our life.
Sure.
So
is there a plan to get that into some festivals or anything, or what's the goal?
Yes, that's the hope. That's the hope. Being an international artist in America means a lot of visa stuff, and so any sort of festivals, any sort of recognition really helps out that case to in order to stay on a different visa later. So that's kind of the goal, because there's a few of us who are internationals in the movie. So
well, I've written a few of those letters, so if you ever need one from the pod, let us know, because you are a nominee of our podcast. So that's a thing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, so the short film. What are the goals, though? So where are you headed? Like, what is your 10-year, 20-year hope?
Obviously,
things change, but
I think a lot of people tell you, especially in this city, that it's impossible to do both film and theater. But I've met people who do both, and that's kind of my goal. I want to do a little bit of everything, and I want to keep stretching myself as an artist in any ways that I can. You know, if it's learning a new skill or working different dialects, which is really a big challenge when English is your second language.
Right.
But additionally to that, I would like to merge my two, not that American culture is my culture, but I have been here for one third of my life. And it has crafted who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to say, you know, I'm never going to be American enough, but also I'm no longer a full Serbian, because I went through high school here, you know, I've missed a big significant part of development in Serbia.
Sure.
And I think that there lies a story in there. There lies a story between merging these two cultures. And also the region that I come from is so full of history and wonderful people and stories that haven't been told. And I'm hoping that I'm grateful, honestly, that Fringe exists and that I found the ability to write through that. Because that inspires me to write stories of my people and where I come from. And
well, keep doing
it.
Because holy shit. You're not doing anything this Fringe, right?
Not unless, I mean, I'm going to be supporting a lot of my friends. There's so many shows that are coming up, and I'm very excited. Fringe is always such an exciting time of the year.
It is. And you know, I was thinking about like producing some stuff this year and putting some stuff up this year, and I was just like, I can't. I'm gonna focus on the award, or else I'd call you, I'd cast you. I'd love to work with you someday.
I would love to work with you.
Phenomenal, phenomenal performer and writer. I'm a writer director who happens to perform. That's kind of my gig. So I'm sure we can find something there. But I'm saying this all because I'd love to read more of your scripts. I'm saying this to our listeners too, because the way you write is very interesting, and it felt almost like you were writing to yourself, whereas most playwrights are writing to a reader, right? Or like to a director. And when I was just going back through it actually a couple days ago before this, and I was just like, yeah, it's like, it's, she doesn't expect anybody to ever read this almost. That's kind of how it feels. And it makes me want to read like 10 more of your things because it's actually an exciting way to write, and it's not how I read most plays.
And I think that came about that because honestly, I am still a green writer, so it's not like it was an intentional stylistic choice.
Right.
I think it was, I worked with an incredible mentor in this play, Christian Dursa, who was with me through and through from the beginning of this play, and really I give him credit for so much of it. But one of the things he told me, especially when I was starting to write the second act with a daughter, I had written the first draft and it was just kind of like, you know, how the first drafts are. And then he was like, but what is your relationship to this relationship? Like, what is the relationship with your parents in your life, you know? And not in a way to be like, go method, but more just like, what is your opinion on this in this point of your life as a young woman, you know? And that really changed everything for me. And it was such a simple question, but I actually sat down and I was like, oh, I need to stop running away from myself. I need to stop running away from my current understanding of life, and I need to lean into that. And I think that perhaps that style came out of that, because really the second act came out of, I started writing a letter to my father, you know? Not that everything, a lot of it didn't end up in the play, but there was a lot of things that I think we as kids want to say to our parents that for some reason, you know, conflicts happen and things are not fully heard. But I was like, oh, I'm someone who's been far away from home for a long time. There is that sense of separation, the way that there was a sense of separation in the play. And I was like, and this is my understanding with this relationship right now. And I think that once I tapped into that, the play kind of wrote itself from there. And there were still very different stories, but I think that kind of allowed me to step into that private sort of space and
absolutely
writing.
You can feel it. You can feel that you know this, whether you know it or not, if that makes sense. You the writer, the performer, have felt these things. And to me, it's so, like, I was a little bit jealous, if you want the truth, watching it, just because I feel I'm a very simple writer. I'm very kind of to the point and sort of, which, you know, every writer's different, whatever. But when I compare to other writers and they start saying these things that are like, this is, and I don't mean this in a negative way, like a little bit verbose, like as Byron is wont to do, right?
And but definitely like, his language also projected me into a direction that I was like, yes, we're going with this.
But I was like watching it being like, oh, I could never write that. Like I could never pull that from my soul. And so it was pretty amazing to watch. And that's why I really stuck with it and glommed onto it.
Really appreciate it.
For sure. Okay, so Nothing Fringe. We know your goals. We know where you're headed. Do you have any? This is a weird question, but I'm very interested in this right now. Is your drive? What is? I'm not going to guide you anywhere. What is your drive for doing theater?
I think it was always because of the people. I really, really think that that's how I got into theater, and that's why I stay in theater, and that's why, as much as I love film, it's never going to replace theater. There is something about just like that live energy and the discovery each night and each moment, you know, because you do a play for 40 times in a run or more, if you're lucky. And I think that there might be a tendency to be like, well, I've done it, I know what's safe. But the audience also keeps you on your toes. I found that whenever it's like, ooh, that worked, I'm going to do that. It never works the second time. So it's, I think my drive for theater is just going back to something I said earlier, is just like that expansion of self and also connection with others.
Yeah.
So I think that those things are, you know, tied up together, because I think that theater just inspires me to renew myself every day and really challenge myself to renew myself, and to renew relationships with people and to be curious about life. I feel like I've started looking at life differently once I've tapped into, oh, I'm an artist, you know, like what what are simple things in everyday life that we overlook? I think we as artists have to lean into those. So absolutely. I think that's my drive for doing theater. It really enriches anyone's life.
Well, I would argue that that answer is the reason why you will be successful and the reason why you are already successful. I just think in Los Angeles, there is that pursuit of fame aspect that does kill a lot of what we're doing out here. And I think it's easy, especially outside of LA too, to just see us all as that, right? Like anyone who lives in LA, we were talking about Chicago theater. I have friends in Chicago who are sort of just like, well, why are you in LA unless you're trying to be famous? And I'm like, I think it's because there's a ton of opportunity out here that has little to do with fame. Like,
yes,
there's a community here that people don't really talk about in a positive light, or don't talk about at all, as if it's just, there's just film culture. And it's just, it's nice to hear you say, like, film, I can do film and theater, but like my love is in the theater, because that's where I get to really like feel what I want to feel and tell the stories and get that live energy and make the audience feel what I want them to feel. And, you know, in film, you don't get that so much. So it's just an interesting topic. It comes up a lot on the podcast, just about like why we do this at all.
Yeah.
So it's just,
and I find that, as unfortunately, in my current experience as a young woman in the city, a lot of the stuff that I've done on film, that's not the stuff that I or my friends have written, has been, you're a wife, a very young wife who has two lines and you just have to smile. And I'm like, like after doing Chekhov, you want me to do that? I mean, that sounds pretentious, but you know, like,
you're right.
It's just like, I want to, like, I've seen what the possibility of it is. I've seen what female characters can be written as. It's not all about being a good wife who smiles and approves of everything that her husband does. So I think that that's also another thing that really draws me back to theater, to just see those possibilities of complexity of characters.
Anya, I just had an epiphany. And I'm sure you've played this role, and that's fine. You haven't done it with me as your director. I think we need... I have a concept for the Seagull.
Oh,
I think you have to be my Nina. We'll talk.
Okay, that would... Literally, you just made my life.
We will talk. I have a whole concept for it, and I can't talk about it on the pod because somebody will steal it.
Okay.
But you would make an amazing...
Everyone will just have to come see it.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, we'll talk.
We'll talk.
Anya, is there anything else you want to say to the listeners? Is there anything that you just want to say to, like, your friends and anybody else that might listen to this episode? Like, what's your final say?
Wow, that sounds so official. Yeah. But, I mean, I just want to say thank you to you and to the rest of the group in the podcast. I think you guys cultivate such an amazing environment and support for artists. And I think that you're one of the... Because I was a first-time fringer. I didn't know much what to expect. It was overwhelming in many ways, you know?
I'm sure.
Wonderful in other ways.
Yeah.
And I think that you guys are kind of really a root in the middle of it all for me. And just kind of, I knew I was following your Instagram and seeing your recommendations. And I think that for any, I have a ton of friends who are doing Fringe this year.
Yeah.
I think definitely checking you guys out has been like a saving grace. And also beyond Fringe as well, just hearing, you know, your thoughts on different playwrights and keeping that fire alive for the theater in the city. So
we're doing our best.
Thank you. Yes.
We appreciate that. Yeah, we just love LA theater. We try to spotlight it as much as possible. We do it every episode. And we just want to hold up all the artists that we think are doing great work out here. Because we also do fight against the idea of, and this happens in every city, the island of misfit toys, where just people are just coming together and just being a community but not actually making good stuff. And we do fight against that, because it's like, no, that's not what LA theater is. There's so much more than that. There are people like Anya who are changing the game, bringing new levels of professionalism and talent to what we can be doing and passion also. And that's why we want to work with you. And that's, we were all just, we were inspired by you, and then getting to talk to you outside of it. You're incredible. So I can already
tell.
You're a phenomenal person. We'll be buddies, and definitely future collaborators. We gotta have you back, but we gotta have you back for like a real episode.
So
if you have anything, this season we're only doing 5 playwrights because I have a child now. So moving forward, So
have the 6th playwright.
So I think we're focusing mostly this season on just like movies, random things. We're doing an episode that comes out this week about clowning. Like we're just anything theater related, the lenses of theater. So if you're like, hey, I'd really love to do a whole episode about viewpoints, great. Come on, and we'll just, with the other two hosts, we'll just bullshit, and it'll be a good time.
Let's do that. That would be really fun. Yes. Cool.
Then hit me up with any ideas like that. Everybody, I don't know. Keep your eyes out because she's about to blow up in some way or another. And then I'll definitely be directing her in something soon, so you can come check that out. But thank you, everyone, for joining us for this artist spotlight. Thank you, Anya.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we will be back. I think this comes out Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, which means we're before Clowning. That's the next episode. Clowning with Bonnie, he is next, followed by Grease Live. The NBC TV musical Grease Live. We're doing all of the, it's not NBC, it's Fox. That one's Fox. We're doing all of the live TV musicals right now. And that's our second to last one. We're doing that one. And then later in the season, we're doing Jesus Christ Superstar with John Legend.
Oh, yeah.
After that is, I'm doing this off the top of my head. I should have written it down, but I'm pretty sure the next one is American Utopia with the movie, the Spike Lee Talking Heads, David Byrne movie with Natalie Nicole Dressel and Jay Dutcher. So that'll be a blast. And I think our next playwright is, I'll never remember. It's okay. I've probably said it on all the other episodes surrounding this, but I don't have my notes. We know most of you are theater nerds like us who want to join in on the conversation. So please do message us on Instagram or email us. We'll read your opinions, questions, and hot takes in our next miniseries. Thank you to Ryan Thomas Johnson for our theme song. Our theme song is better than your theme song. Also, thank you, Pam Quinn, for writing the bonus episode theme song that you heard at the beginning of this episode. And also, thank you to Carol Churchill, the playwright, for writing our script for us today. She did write everything that Anya and I said, because we're top girls. Please go rate, subscribe, or review, or all three. It really does help. And we'll see you guys next time. Anya, good times.
Good times.
The theater, the theater. Bring out Louis! Theater, theater. To be or not to be. Theater, theater.